Well, hello and welcome to this Arrivé episode. My co-host Lizzie Banks has been picking me up on the pronunciation of these Arrivé episodes. Arrivé episode from the Cycling Podcast Femina. We are, of course, warning as usual, we are going to be full of spoilers today, going through exactly what happened at the Women's Tour of Flanders. So if you don't want to know what happened, or if you want to catch up beforehand, then here is your out. Get off, go and watch it and come back to us. And we're going to go through exactly the who, what's, where's, why's, as much as we can, aren't we, Lizzie? Lizzie, you've told me that you had waffles in your cupboard and didn't bring them out on this special Tour of Flanders day. What are you thinking?
No, I didn't. I'm saving my waffles for Liège-Bastogne-Liège day.
Okay, I think that is fair, but it's also Easter Sunday, so you would think, like, that's chocolate and waffles. You would have nailed two things in one go. Had you gone for it?
We're having fish for dinner. Does that count as celebratory enough for Easter Sunday for you?
Oh, I don't know. Isn't Easter Sunday lamb?
No, I think that's... Isn't it? Yeah, but don't you feed the 5,000 with
fish? Oh, so if anything is in the Bible, it counts.
I've got the wrong... Yeah, and, you know, I built an ark this morning and put all my cats inside
that,
it. So
that I can totally believe about you, Lizzie, actually. Luckily, we're not talking about Bible stories because we wouldn't be very good at that. But we are talking about women's cycling, which we are pretty good at, I would hope to say. The Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Women's Tour of Flanders. Well, let me give you a little summary, keeping it as short as possible, about what happened in this race today. Well, there was an early break of six and they built a lead of over 5 minutes on the pack. But as soon as the climbs hit, the breakaway whittled down both in terms of numbers and advantage. On the Molenberg and then the Eikenberg, Marlon Reusser hit the front, drawing the group apart, but never quite escaping the rest. But Reusser's race ended soon after as she came down in a pretty nasty crash in the middle of the pack, along with another favourite, Kim LeCourt, amongst others. Only Anastasia Kolesova of Canyon-SRAM remained out front from the early break and was swept up as the riders headed to the Koppenberg. On the fearsome climb, Franzi Koch of FDJ took to the front with teammate Demi Vollering in her wheel. She held on to the front all the way, drawing away with an elite group that included the likes of Elisa Longo-Borghini, Lotta Capecchi, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot and Puk Pieterse. The chase behind caught the front runners and the numbers swelled with FDJ persistently doing the work. On the Kreuzberg, it was Koch yet again. This is going to happen quite a lot, I should tell you, who did the damage, leaving only five alongside Vollering, Pieterse, Capecchi and Ferrand-Prevot. Vollering took over, but UAE ADQ chased back yet again. On to the penultimate Quermont climb, and would you believe it, it was Koch again leading. This time, Vollering made her acceleration and was off solo, building a huge gap. Pieterse and Ferrand-Prevot made chase, but they continued to ship time on the final Puttersburg climb and in the run into the finish. A resounding first win at the Ronde van Vlaanderen then for Vollering, with Ferrand-Prevot outkicking Pieterse for second. Now, normally, Lizzie, when we see it's Demi Vollering, when you think, oh, well, that was totally expected. But this seemed like a bit of a different win from her, didn't it? Obviously, it is, as I said, her first win at Tour of Flanders. I mean, she's won everything else. She has had such success in the classics. Previously, Liège-Bastogne-Liège and obviously Strade Bianche. But this is quite special to win Tour of Flanders for her, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think the thing about this win is, and the thing about the Tour of Flanders race is, you have to have the legs, you have to have the team, you have to have the lack of bad luck, and you have to have the confidence in yourself. And she had this culmination of everything today, along with the weather forecast, which actually really, really acted in her favour. So there was a big tailwind going down that long straight to the finish in Oudenaarde. And when you see a day like that, that is a perfect day for a solo breakaway. If there's a headwind or if there's a crosswind, so much more likely to come back together for a sprint. So you look at a race like that and you say, okay, you circle Marlon Reusser, you circle Demi Vollering. But at the end of the day, they've still got to do it. They've still got to be in position on every single climb to get in there, to be able to keep their powder dry, to have the energy in the end of the race to make those attacks. And I think, you know, it was just the perfect storm for Demi Vollering and for FDJ as a team today. They had such such a great team behind them. This was definitely the FDJ A team, wasn't it? We've seen sort of, maybe it's a bit mean to say the B team in Trofeo Alfredo Binder while the A team were up at altitude. But when the A team come together, there is no stopping them. And she had, well, at least three domestiques de luxe in Elise Chabé, Celia Jury, and of course the, you know, unstoppable Franzi Koch, who, I can't say they handed her that victory, but they made it a hell of a lot easier for her.
She was phenomenal. I mean, to see Franzi Koch on the front of all of these major climbs, drawing out the pack, but also, you know, we did see her kind of, you know, she'd done her work and Vollering came to the front after the Kreuzberg. And you'd normally you would think, OK, that's that domestique done. We're not going to see them again. But she gets into the UAE chase train, comes back again. And then again, is totally instrumental on the Quermont and that winning move for Demi Vollering. It's absolutely unbelievable. And also, I was looking back at Franzi Koch's results this year, because in the classics, she's finished fifth in Omloop, third in Strade. Gent-Wevelgem were in Flanders Field, she finished 13th. Dwarsdorf-Vlaanderen, she finished 8th. And Ronde van Vlaanderen today, she finished 10th after doing all of that work. That in itself is like, if you were a rider with that set of Palmares for this season, you'd think, that's amazing, I've done really, really well. But
yeah, good job.
But that's the thing, that she, in all of these races, she's done loads of work. And in two of those races, it finished her teammate Vollering winning. In one of those races, it ended up her teammate Elise Chabé winning. And then in another one, Elise Chabé finished 4th and Vollering finished 2nd in the other one. So all of these fantastic results, kind of never being beneath, 13th place in these classics. And yet she has helped one of her teammates finish even higher up, kind of podium or win level. I mean, we did speak, didn't we, on the last regular episode about Franzi Koch and about how incredible it has been, what kind of a huge change she's gone through as a rider. But this is just continuing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the thing is that there's no ego there. We also spoke on the regular episode about how after Elise Chabé won Strada, would that change her mentality going into the races? Would she come into Ronde van Vlaanderen and go, well, you know, I've got just as good a chance as Demi Vollering does? And no. And that's, you know, a sort of a bit of a change that we see with Demi Vollering coming into these races, that she's surrounded by these riders who are 100% there for her, but also 100% don't have their own ego. You know, if things change out on the road and they need to take their opportunity, they will, and they're in the position to do so, and they are good enough to do so. But there's such a commitment to the one leader that it kind of gives Demi this different confidence that we've seen in the past. And I think that level of confidence changed with her as soon as she moved to FDJ, as soon as she had that sort of very, very different atmosphere from what she'd previously had at SD Works. Because, you know, at SD Works, there are so many leaders. And even if they say, okay, right, Lotte Kopecky is the leader today, Vibus is always going to be thinking like, oh yeah, well, you know, if I can get over, then maybe I can have my chance. And that's the difference here. You know, Franzi Koch, Elise Chabé, Celia Jury, there was no thinking, oh, if I get over, maybe I can win it. They were just, this is the plan, this is all in for this rider. If it doesn't work out, if Demi Vollering crashes, yeah, we go for Franzi. But that is not the plan, and we're not even entertaining plan B unless we absolutely have to. So we're all in for one rider. And this, I just feel like it's just, you know, brought about this change in Demi. And perhaps it's also something about getting older and wiser and more confident as well. But it's kind of, this is the same, but different
it
Demi.
It is, isn't it? I was just struck by, it seemed like such a resilient performance from her. She didn't, I think previously we have seen her, even when she's won, I mean, we've actually heard other riders say that, oh, you know, I remember Marlon Royster saying, oh, you know, Demi always panics. And we didn't see that at all. We didn't see a kind of any flapping from Demi at all. You know, when she had to kind of come to the front, it wasn't kind of like, oh, right, I have to make my move right now. It's like, I can come to the front, and if the group behind gets chased back, then I've still got a chance to win this race. I haven't just got one chance and it's gone. I've got plenty of chances. And I think it's, yeah, a huge amount of confidence. But I think also, you know, you say about experience, and it's definitely that, but it's also, she doesn't have to win every single race either. She can also be a little bit more focused because she's won plenty of races. So it's kind of like now we know that she dreamed of winning the Tour of Flanders, and that was what she was focusing on and manifesting, and that is what she's achieved today. But I think it's that, you know, she doesn't have to be literally in every... She doesn't, like, not being able to win Strade Bianche a few weeks ago will not have affected her mentality going into these other races. I feel like, Lizzie, you are pursing your lips as if to say that you disagree. And I'm...
No, not at all.
Hear I don't, you disagree on that.
I don't disagree at all. But what I was finding so funny when you were saying that was that she doesn't have to win every race. But if we look at her races from this year, St. Marna Valenciana, she won two of the three stages in the general classification. Omloop Het Nieuwsblad, she won. Strade Bianche, she didn't win. She had a puncture and then she was sent down a road, random road, but her teammate won. Tvaars Door Vlaanderen, she was second in an incredibly tight sprint with Marlen Reusser just on Wednesday. Ronde van Vlaanderen, she won. So
she doesn't have to win it,
right,
though,
is it? She doesn't have to win it. But I also think it's super interesting what you were saying about, you know, previously how our teammate, how, you know, Marlen Reusser said sometimes she panics, because I've felt in the past that sometimes she's the thing that she's really missed is the tactical nous. Like she's won because she has the raw brute power required to get up these climbs faster than anybody else. And then once she's over, she can time trial. She's super powerful. She's super aero. She just puts her head down and gets on with it. But sometimes, you know, she's been in situations and just thought, like, why aren't you attacking here? Why aren't you doing this? Why are you waiting for your teammates? And it was, or at least seemed to be, that element of panicking and not quite trusting in yourself and trusting in the process and trusting in your gut feelings about where you need to go. And maybe the reason that's changed is experience. Maybe the reason that's changed is because she feels more secure. Maybe it's a combination of everything. But I completely agree with you that has changed. And you were saying before we were recording, Rose, about sort of a sense of fragility that she used to have. And you're right. I think that that's gone. She still shows her emotion. And that's really nice. I really like that in riders, that you can see what this means to them. They're not just robotic winning machines. But it's sort of that fragility and emotion doesn't sort of affect her to cloud her thinking. She still has that clarity of thought to just race so clearly and so purely and, so naturally, I guess.
I think that's the thing, is we love that emotion, but I think that emotion on the road can get in the way, can't it? Because it's like, if something doesn't work out, if you then think, oh, this isn't working, or if you think, oh, my teammates aren't really working for me, all of that, if you're an emotional rider, can really affect you. And I think she's kind of, we're seeing a Demi who's kind of come past that and can harness her emotions in a positive way and use them just to make her stronger. Well, we should talk, shouldn't we, about, I guess, Lotta Kopecky might be interesting to talk about, because she was really such a hot favourite coming in to today. Obviously, she's kind of the record holder at the Tour of Flanders and has shown, has had big wins. Milan-San Remo, of course, being the biggest win, Nocca Recursa being a big win. But it's so hard to judge Lotta Kopecky, isn't she? So poker-faced. You never know whether she's on a good day or a bad day. And obviously, she finished fourth, didn't she? She won the sprint for fourth. But she didn't quite have the legs today. And ST Works also didn't have the team today, did they?
I thought ST Works actually did more works than they normally do, to be honest. So, I mean, I guess we'll talk about ST Works quickly, briefly, because when the coverage started around 90 kilometres, around sort of 90 to 60, I was thinking, oh my goodness, where the hell is FDJ? Because normally they're so present on the front, they're the ones doing the chasing. The gap to the break actually went out to over 6 minutes, and I was kind of the one panicking a bit. I was taking on Demi Vollering's panic. And ST Works did actually show their face on the front, kind of to my surprise. But in the end, they didn't have the numbers in the final that they needed in order to help Lotta Kopecky. But it wasn't just that. I think during the race and even before the race, I was thinking, you know, Lotta Kopecky has been a bit more like Lottery Kopecky this year. We just don't know what we're going to get. And, you know, this is, of course, something that I'm measuring by her very, very high standards. She had a rough race at Omloop at Nieuwsblad, a rough race at Strada, okay race at Binder. Then she won Nocera Corsa. She won Milan-San Remo. And then at Dwars van Vlaanderen and Ronde van Vlaanderen, she just couldn't really keep the pace when she needed to. And I was thinking, you know, is this something about the fact that she's got the punch? She's got the punch that we always see, that we always, you know she's had, but she hasn't quite got that endurance and that hill endurance. Because to win a race like Milan-San Remo, you don't need that really, really deep endurance. And again, kind of the same with Nocera Corsa. But with Ronde van Vlaanderen, you're going deep on these hills over and over and over again. It's this repeated, really deep efforts. And she's been very clear this season that her main number one goal was to win Paris-Roubaix. And so before this, I was kind of thinking, okay, well, she's building up to Paris-Roubaix. But now it's a week away. And maybe, I don't know, maybe she has really still got that punch on the flat, and maybe she will, you know, blow us away and win Paris-Roubaix by a country mile. And, you know, she's been just working on the flat and that punch and hasn't really been working so much on the hills. But I think we still, she was one of the big questions coming into this. Like, what is her form? How is she going to be? Where is she looking ahead to Paris-Roubaix, which is her big goal? And I just don't feel like that question has been answered.
She also does, everyone at SD Works does better when they have got more cards to play, and they didn't have many cards today. Lorena Vibus was up there in the early phase of the race, but we don't get much information. We didn't see Lorena Vibus crash, but the information that we've had since is that she crashed on the descent of the Koppenberg, but was all right. She came back to the group, but she didn't finish the race. So she obviously, out of injury, or maybe just thinking, as soon as she's in one of the back chasing groups, it's not really going to be her day. So maybe, and she couldn't really do any more work from that point. So we didn't get to see Lorena Vibus, what she was up to. And I think SD Works really does rely on having that constant kind of attack and counter-attack, and just people being so unsure about which move to chase down that they miss a move that becomes a winning move. So I think SD Works not having that meant that we couldn't fully, you know, see what also what Kopecky could have been capable of if they had that other card to play.
Yeah, you're right. And Misha Bredewald was up there. And in the past, even last season, she's been super, super strong. And she's strong this season, but she hasn't quite got that killer blow that she's had in other seasons. And so, you know, Lotta had a good domestique, but not a killer second option. And like you say, I think that was one of the problems. But in the end, the fact of the matter is that Vollering let loose on the Koppenberg. She let loose on... I actually made a list. I made a list of where FDJ were positioned on all of the climbs. Mullenberg, I've written bad positioning, but she was still fifth into the climb. Eichenberg, Shabby was on the front with Reusser, and Demi Vollering was right behind. Koppenberg, we didn't see the lead in because of a bad crash, but as soon as we saw, Franzi and Demi were one and two. Tyenberg, Shabby, Elise Shabby and Celia Jury with Demi behind. Kruisberg, Shabby and Jury with Demi behind. Kvaremont, Franzi in the front, and Demi, you know, off she goes and never comes back. So in the end, you know, you can say, oh, well, you know, she did have a rider, she didn't have the other cards. In the end of the day, Vollering was just better than everybody else. She wore everybody else down. She went off and did her thing on the Quaremont, and nobody could come back. We could see Pauline Ferrand-Prévot rocking and rolling like we so rarely see with Puck Pieterse behind. And nobody had an answer. Vollering was just imperious. And from then on, just her lead went out and out, and nobody could bring it back. And the interesting thing was actually behind her in the what I like to call PPPFP group, Puck Pieterse, Pauline Ferrand-Prévot group. So there was the two of Puck Pieterse, Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, and then behind that, three UAE riders with Kopecky and Backstead. Those two groups were both pushing, and their gap stayed, you know, 15 to 20 seconds between them all the way. So every other rider in the or in that sort of, you know, top eight race was absolutely equally matched. And then Demi Vollering was just on a different level, just completely on a different level. So in the end of the day, it's not about other cards that SD Works has. It's about one rider is just miles and away better than everybody else.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Well, we did have, and you kind of touched on it there, Lizzie, we did have one other what if, which we were kind of all hoping to see, which was to see how Marlon Reusser performed. Because on those first climbs that we saw when the coverage started, it was Reusser that was at the front. And she was already, even on the Molenberg, bringing riders away with her and creating little gaps. And unfortunately, because of this crash that she had on the way into the Koppenberg, we didn't get to see what more she could do. She's obviously had a phenomenal week winning Dwars Door Vlaanderen and beating Demi Vollering there in a sprint, which I think was a little bit unprecedented. So it's a shame to have not seen her be in the running today, because I think that was one of the big questions about how Reusser versus Vollering could shape up. And it's interesting, Lizzie, because you said that you were re-listening to an Arrivé from a few years ago where we were talking about how indestructible these two riders, Marlon Reusser and Demi Vollering, were as teammates. So we just want to see more of this rivalry, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, and Marlon versus Demi was one of my big questions coming in. I had three big questions. What's the form of Lotte Kopecky? What's the form of Pauline Ferrand-Prévot? And how are we going to see a Marlon versus Demi head-to-head? And how is it going to play out? Because you mentioned the final sprint at Dwars Door Vlaanderen when Marlon just beat Demi, but it wasn't unprecedented, because actually they had almost exactly the same sprint in the Tour de Suisse, where everybody expected Demi to win, and then Marlon actually won, and that was probably nibbling away in the back of Demi's mind. So it would have been a fascinating situation to see these two go to the finish together, and you know what would have happened again in a sprint like that. And yeah, I mean, Marlon was clearly in very, very good form. She was absolutely thrashing everybody else on the Molenberg. She was so powerful in Dwars Door Vlaanderen. And there was a huge question mark around her coming into Dwars Door Vlaanderen, because we hadn't seen her since the UAE Tour, where she'd had a big crash, she'd smashed up her knee, and she hadn't done any races. She'd actually had quite a lot of time off the bike before she was even able to come back training. This was her first race back. She was surprised to see quite how good she was. But the one weird thing I would say about the crash that she was involved in, which was about a kilometre before the Koppenberg, so super, super key positioning point, her team, Movistar, had been on the front in really good position, but where the crash happened was quite far back in the middle. And, you know, it's what you call as a rider the danger zone, because it's where a lot of the crashes happen. And I don't really know, you know, maybe she'd just been sort of sucked in by the, people call it a washing machine, but sometimes it's more like a black hole of the peloton. And she was right in this danger zone. So she was not in a good position on the Koppenberg, which, yeah, you obviously will never know how that played out, but that would have been so interesting, because there's a lot of climbs where you come in a bad position and you can work your way up. But the Koppenberg, I don't think it is one of those often, because something can happen in front of you. People slip, people put their foot down, and then you're just nowhere. You're just so far back that getting back to the front is really, really difficult. But yeah, it's definitely an unanswered question, Marlon versus Demi. I think we will have to wait to the Ardennes Classics to get that question answered, to see who's going to come out on top between them.
You did say one of your other questions was the form of Pauline Ferrand-Prévot, which I think is also a question that's probably not been answered today quite. Obviously, you know, phenomenal form and finishing second in that race. I think that was also very remarkable to finish second when it had looked like Puk Pieterse had the better legs all the way through that race, that she still had the edge on Puk at the end to take a second silver.
Oh, but did you see, right at that sprint, she kept trying to get up, and I feel like she was just cramping. Yeah. I think about three or four times she kept trying to sprint and then having to sit back down again. It was almost like she was riding a horse in the last 400 metres because she would try and sprint and just thought, this is not happening. And they'd, you know, fair play to both of them. They had pushed so hard to get their podium places because it was podium or nothing. If the others were going to come back, they were going to win. Oh, not going to win, sorry, going to get these, win the second and third spots on the podium, let's say. And so often, you know, you get to a kilometre to go and then people start messing around. And they didn't. They just pushed all the way to the line. And then when Puck couldn't sprint and just started cramping, she was like, right, that's it, third place. That's what it is. So fair play to both of them because it's nice to see them not messing around. I mean, it's more exciting when they do, but I'm happier when
they were kind of great. So, well, I mean, Visma Lease Bike had been doing a lot of work, but by the time they got into that group, they were kind of the solo riders, weren't they, towards the very end of that race. So they kind of had, the responsibility was on them. They had, again, we've seen UAE team in numbers, again, not getting the result, of course, that they would have wanted to.
6, 7, and 8. So three in the top 10, but 6, 7, and 8. Yeah, it's kind of a, on paper, that's a DS's nightmare.
Yeah, but
isn't
I can't see how they could have done more. I mean, it's also worth noting that they lost Brody Chapman to a crash. They lost Megan Nyastrab to a crash. So in a way, when you're lining up with six riders and two of them crash out and then you still end with three in the top 10, that's quite remarkable. We know that Lisa Longo Borghini wasn't feeling her best. She had said that she had she was, you know, not in feeling top form. So we knew that it wasn't necessarily going to be her day. But they were kind of animating the race. Like they were still in it, trying to be in it, weren't they? They were always chasing back. There were so many times when a little gap formed. And I think Elisa Longo Borghini, a lot of the time, was the one that just didn't have the legs to follow on some of these accelerations. It was often in front of her that's where the gap formed. And then I think at that point you could see on the road there was a bit of a change and it was kind of like, right, Elisa, I think you're working for Caroline Swinkels and seeing what Swinkels can do. But do you think they could have done more, Lizzie? Or, I mean, how could they have used those riders of Swinkels, Persico and Longo Borghini better than they did?
I don't think you can. I mean, at the end of the day, if you haven't got the legs to get in the group, you haven't got the legs to get in the group. And the only thing that they could have done is, you know, sent one rider out of that chasing pack of five behind the PPPFP group. But, you know, then they're getting someone to attack for fourth place. And that wasn't their goal. They were trying. They were working really hard to get back the PPPFP group.
I think there was an errant, really there's a mouthful. Few errant P's in there.
Yeah, peas are actually one of my favourite vegetables, big aside. But anyway, you know, they were working really hard to get that group back and they didn't. And, you know, they were still riding for a podium spot. So, yeah, I actually think it's a super good sign because they were still willing to take the race on. They were still willing to really push for it, even when they maybe knew that they didn't really have that podium shot. And I think that the form of Elisa Longo Borghini today is a super good sign because she's been ill. She says she's still ill. She says she still doesn't feel like good Elisa. And so if that's what we're seeing now, then again, in 2 weeks' time, or maybe, I don't know if she's racing Paris-Roubaix, I'm not sure, but at least when we get to the Ardennes, and at least in 3 weeks' time, by the time we get to Liège-Bastogne-Liège, I expect to see her coming out of that and being super strong. And again, UAE coming out and riding out like they have all season, really cohesively, ready to take the race by its horns. Do races have horns? And yeah, I think it's a good omen. I think it's a good omen for the races to come.
Well, I just looked up and it did say that Longo Borghini is expecting to start at Paris-Roubaix. So
I thought you were going to say you looked up and races do
actually
have horns.
I guess car horns. There's a lot of car horns in a bike race, isn't there?
Yeah, you're right.
I guess that's one kind of horn. But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if Longo Borghini does, if she doesn't decide to take Paris-Roubaix off, what she can do there. I thought it was also, we had a few remarkable results, didn't we, for some young guns. We talked a lot about these very established riders like Vollering and Ferran Prevot and Capecchi. But, yeah, I mean, there were some remarkable stand-up performances. Zoe Backstead finishing fifth, of course, was
an
incredible
result.
That was
ridiculous.
And I know we kind of all knew that she's going very well, but, you know, it's another level, isn't it, to get fifth place, be sprinting side by side in a photo finish with Lotte Kopecky for fifth place in the Tour of Flanders.
I mean, Ronde van Vlaanderen is a climber's race. Zoë Backsted isn't a climber. or until today, Zoë Backsted hasn't been a climber. She's been a flat, powerful, windy time trial rider. And suddenly she's a climbing cobbled classic specialist. I am so impressed. And also, you know, she was interviewed at the end of the finish and she just said, "Oh, I just had so much fun." And that's the key. You know, we so often see these breakout performances from riders who are relatively unknown, and they'll have one season where they get loads of really, really, you know, notable top tens, a couple of podiums, maybe even a win. I'll get signed by a big team. And then they just don't produce after that, because suddenly, instead of it being an intrinsic motivation, like, I just want to do this because I'm having so much fun, it becomes extrinsic. Like, you have to perform, you are the leader. So I think with Zoë Backsted, what I'd love to see is her being given sole leadership with freedom and without pressure. I think that's really, really difficult to do. But given she was fourth, was it, in Fast Tour of Vlaanderen, fifth today in Ronde van Vlaanderen, I'm super, super excited to see what she's going to do going into Paris-Roubaix next week, because that is the race where her heart really is. And I think she's got so much confidence from these last few days of racing that, yeah, we're going to see one seriously fired up Zoë Backsted. But yeah, I mean, going back to the other young riders, Fleur Moors, she was 16th overall in the end, but that doesn't reflect her performance. She had a puncture about 59k to go, came back from that really quickly, just before one of the climbs. And she only got distanced, it was after the Kreuzberg, where Demi Vollering made, you know, a pretty hard attack. And again, she's somebody who you would say is more of a sprinter rider. She's challenging Lorena Wiebes in the sprints almost. not quite challenging her yet, but she will be. She will be, mark my words. And I think that's super impressive. And then finally, Celia Jarry. You know, we've not really seen her have our own chance this year, because she is, again, another very, very dedicated domestique on the FDJ Suez United team. But she finished 18th in the end, but this just doesn't at all reflect the performance that she did. She was working incredibly hard in the headwind to pull out that gap from this select group that the FDJ Suez had created with Vollering and Kopecky and Longo Borghini. And yeah, she did so much work. I mean, shouldn't be surprising, really. Last year she was the under 23 world champion as a first year under 23. Previous year, she was riding in the junior category. She was fifth in the world junior champs, but French junior national champ. So she's got pretty big things ahead. And to be able to come straight into the World Tour peloton to just ride with ease, you know.
But also to have...
sort of ride as if she's always been there.
The pressure also, because, you know, it's not an unpressured job to be a domestique when your leader is Demi Vollering. I mean, that isn't a job... You know, that isn't total sort of freedom, is it? I mean, there is a lot of responsibility with that. So I think that's even more impressive that she's kind of taken that on her shoulders and is willing to put herself out there and make sure that Vollering is in a good position. And positioning is something that takes years to learn. And we can see that there are some riders that have got phenomenal power, phenomenal ability, but when they come in, well, Kristin Vollering, but also, you know, like Mavi Garcia is a phenomenal rider, but she doesn't really like being in the peloton, which is she doesn't like being in the bunch, which is it means that she has to ride in a certain way, and then because everyone knows that, it's quite easy to kind of defend against her. So I think when you have someone that like Celia Jarry, who's so young but knows how to position herself and position her leader well, I think that's goes beyond just being a really powerful rider. And I think with all of the riders also, I mean, like with Zoë Backsted, say, you know, we talked about how so often riders come in and they're kind of unknown. I mean, Zoë Backsted is not an unknown rider. She was such a phenomenon as a junior, but also a phenomenon as a, you know, world champion cyclocross rider. She also has a famous name, Magnus Baxter being her dad. There's a lot of pressure and a lot of eyes on her. Even when she was a junior, there was kind of, she's definitely not a rider that can, you know, quietly escape. She also has the Red Bull sponsorship, so that kind of marks her out as different also on her team. You know, she's endorsed differently. She has, wears a different helmet because of it. It's not like these are riders that can kind of work in the shadows and get good results because people are always looking the other way. People know these riders and they still can achieve.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what you say about Zoe Baxter, and that I think that's completely mirrored if you're looking, you know, I listen to the French commentary most of the time, and that pressure from the French public is mirrored for Célia Géry because she is their hopeful for the future. You know, they've got Pauline Ferrand-Prévot who is their woman for now, but Célia Géry is the one who carries all of the pressure as our future star. And they're like, yeah, she's our U23 world champion. She's already on FDJ Suez. Look at what she's doing. And so, you know, as Anglophones, we see the pressure that Zoe Backstead's under, but we don't necessarily see the pressure that, you know, the French riders or the Italian riders or, for instance, the Spanish riders, the Perez twins, you know, that they're under. They're sort of these gilded stars of the future that everybody's expecting to perform. And, you know, I think I was saying to you about Gaia Realini, the pressure that she was under coming in as an Italian rider, this Italian future climbing hope, and she kind of has crumbled under that pressure. You know, we did see Realini when she first started as this possible huge future star, and then in the last couple of years she just hasn't been able to produce it. So that's what makes Zoe Baxter and Célia Géry's performances all the more impressive, and long may they continue to not bow to the pressure and to continue to ride in this, yeah, super impressive manner like they do, with this racecraft seemingly flowing through their blood.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's exactly, I mean, flowing through your blood is exactly right with the Baxter genes. And obviously that's a big race, isn't it, for Zoe Baxter next week's Paris-Roubaix. So we'll see how she fares there. I'm going to go to the waffleometer. Lizzie, how many waffles are you giving today's race out of five waffles? I think five waffles is a lot of waffles. Out of five waffles.
Well, I thought we used to do out of 10.
Okay, I don't know, did we? 10 waffles is an awful lot of waffles. No one's hoping to eat 10 waffles. You'll be really...
Rose,
okay.
I'll let you... I could definitely eat 10 waffles.
I'll let you...
It's okay, because the number I've chosen is divisible by 2, so I can also do it out of 5.
No, 10. Go on, give us 10 waffles. It gives us a little bit more range, doesn't it? It's 5 waffles.
Exactly.
Everything sort of in the midpoint.
You know, we can do a 1 waffle for Flesh Wallon.
You love Flesh Wallon.
I actually do. I was already speaking to Lionel about this and he was saying, oh, Flesh Wallon, so boring. And I was like, I love Flesh Wallon. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
Oh, that's what I was going to do, Lizzie. I feel like I have to pick a different number of waffles.
Well, maybe you can justify your 6 out of 10.
You justify your 6 out of 10, okay.
Okay, fine. I will justify my 6 out of 10. I feel like watching it, I felt a lot of excitement watching Vollering go. I was so behind her. I was willing her on. I was watching the suffering. We had so many big names. It had a lot of classic ingredients. But the reason I didn't score it higher is because looking back at it, I don't feel the same way that I do as a race like Strade Bianche, this year's Strade Bianche, where you just look back and you, oh my goodness, this happened, and it would just fills you with this instant burst of excitement. I look back at it and I think, yeah, that was a really good race. That was a great winner. Kudos. And it had the ingredients of a great race, but it didn't sparkle.
No, it didn't.
Looking back.
Yeah.
But during the race, I loved
it.
No,
I'm totally agree. I mean, if I had to give it not 6 waffles, I'd probably give it like 6.5 waffles.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 5.
No,
okay,
no, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I don't think it's a particularly... it wasn't a memorable one. What I normally love, because I am a Tour of Flanders fan.
I could murder one of those right now with my fish dinner.
And your 6 waffles. I'm a big fan of the race, and normally it's because it is so elastic. I like the way it kind of moves, where these groups go and they come back, and it's kind of constantly changing, and then the makeup of that group slightly changes, and then you kind of, the person who wins it has to be the strongest on the day. Those are things that I like about it. It didn't, for me, it was a little bit elastic, but the winning move was never elastic. Like once she was gone, I mean, we saw from that drone shot on the Quermont, I mean, it was just like, as soon as she'd gone, it was, you know, you could see Pauline Ferrand-Provost, you could see Puk Peeters out, and then the drone had to drive all the way up to the top of the Quermont to find Demi Vollering. So, you know, you can, there's always a bit of a ceiling, I think, on a race where it's decided by one sort of, one move.
I think you're going to have to go down to five,
Rose. Do you think? I'm talking myself.
I have a problem. I have a problem with star ratings. And that is that, you know,
this isn't a star rating,
here,
this is a waffle
rating,
Lizzie.
Okay, please. Right. Well, I have a problem with waffle ratings and people don't utilise them properly.
Okay.
properly. Sorry, I just got waffles on the brain. And that's because, you know, you need to be able to utilise from zero
okay,
to 10.
Okay, I see.
So that there has to be some races that are a one or a two. You can't be scared to give one or two waffles. So if it doesn't quite hit it for you, you've got to go down to five, because we've got to have room for that 7, 8, 9 and
that's
10
true.
Waffles.
I think you are right, Lizzie, actually, because, you know, we see a lot of more exciting races.
Strada Bianchi women, 10 out of 10 waffles. Strada Bianchi men, I'll give it a one. A generous
one waffle. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, we'll see, won't we? I mean, Paris-Roubaix shouldn't really be waffles. It is kind of a Belgian race, but we'll see how many waffles come out for that next week. Lizzie, thank you very much for joining me and for all your insight on the Tour of Flanders. I'll let you go and enjoy a waffle or a flan, whatever you've got going on there.
Actually, I actually do have a flan in the fridge, so maybe I'll just stick a little Belgian flag in it. Thank you, Rose. Love talking about the race.
And thank you very much, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.